This is the Air Raid Podcast brought to you by VivaTheMatadors.com. I'm Ryan Smith, and I'm joined once again by Maitland, Clutch Man, Rutledge. How's it going?
It's going good, Ryan.
Yeah, it's a Thursday night going up into the pretty much on the regular season, the last 2 weeks of the season. We were supposed to have the boss man himself, Kyle Jacobson, on, but I think he got a little upset that I was dogging on his man, Bryce Harper. So maybe if I rag on him enough on the podcast, we can get him on next week. A couple of housekeeping issues before we go deep into Iowa State and some other Texas Tech news and notes. Next week, we are planning our second alumni pod, this time with Tremaine Swindle hosting. Last time, we had Mickey Peters hosting, and we had Stephen Sheffield, Ryan Acock. Supposed to have Aaron Hunt on, but we ended up having Sheffield and Acock. So it should be a really good podcast. Should have several more former players come on and kind of give us their take about Baylor, their memories of the Baylor game and when they played, what it's like playing in Jerry World if, Tremaine played in Jerry World. So a lot of good things going on there, so I hope you stay tuned for that. But before we get to Iowa State, Maitland, we have some notes. And basically the first main couple of talking points is the mass attrition going on at Texas Tech. Whether it's transfers, people getting kicked off the team, people being held out, or retiring from injuries, it's pretty extensive.
It's very extensive, Ryan. I can't recall a time where Texas Tech went through this much attrition. So many guys transferring, getting benched for maybe bad discipline, maybe not picking up the game plan, just players getting kicked off the team. It's just been a rough season of that. Whether it was at the start of the season with Bethel transferring and Madison off the team, to now with some, three players that we think are key players being benched, to retirements of some of our linemen, which has depleted the offensive line in terms of depth. It's just been very rough, Ryan. I don't remember a time seeing Texas Tech go through something like this. And I think at this point in the season, it's starting to take a toll on this team. Because, you have some injuries maybe to the guys that are starting now. Who's going to replace them? Some guys that haven't been quite developed yet or maybe haven't gotten a lot of playing time, maybe some freshmen, and now you're relying on them to come in and get the job done. It's not always easy to have, to get that done and have your team still playing at a high level. So,
the only time I can remember would be under Tuberville, where we lost a lot of early, underclassmen or recruits that came on campus for about a year and then immediately transferred. It kind of left us depleted when Kingsbury took over. But Kingsbury's not only losing people to transfers, but injuries are starting to mount, with the offensive line. I think Justin Murphy this past week has left the team and kind of quit football because he re-tore his ACL, the same one that he injured last year and sat out most. And I think that's a good move because a lot of offensive linemen tend to struggle later in life with walking because of so much weight that they carry on their knees and the movements they're asked to do. So, it gets to be a quality of life thing. But you look down the list at some notable names that have either transferred, been kicked off the team, or outright left. You've got Dixon from last year, obviously Davis Webb. You've got Nigel Bethel, Robert Castaneda, Corey Dalphine, Dakota Allen, Tevin Madison. And then we had three others just this week. And Ivory Jackson. I don't remember his first name. It was Keen.
Stanton Keen. Fullback.
And then Cash Money, who I was really liking. He came in. I'm going to throw that out there because I think that would have been a cool name if he had stuck around and gotten some playing time. He did really well against Louisiana Tech. But Cash Money, Cash Knudsen, all transferring or leaving the team, no longer on the team. And then, again, you go into this week, and Kingsbury has kind of pointed out that he doubts that Hinton, Moore, or Lauderdale will play this weekend for what seems like the fourth or fifth game in a row. I think Hinton was a little bit after Moore and Lauderdale. But you have this, like you said, this depleted team who are fighting for their bowl lives. And one thing I was going to ask Kyle, but I'll ask you, is this a just kind of where we're at with college athletics, with social media, with kind of the way kids are brought up these days through prep ball and high school and what have you? Or is this something that speaks to something systemic within Kingsbury's program that is making people want to leave? And when I say systemic, that could be a good thing. You could be running such a tight ship that people don't want to be held to that standard and will leave. We're not just talking about people that are like, oh, there's stuff that's really wrong here and I don't want to be around it. It could go the other way, but still an issue within Kingsbury's program that's making people want to leave. Which way do you see that, or is it a little bit of both?
Honestly, Ryan, I think it's a little bit of both. When I look at how kids my age are brought up nowadays, it's just kind of a different world. You know, social media is crazy nowadays. Sometimes things can get blown out of proportion. It's just the way it is. As far as the program, I mean, I've been on a record saying that I love how Kingsbury is willing to discipline guys if they step out of line, even to the point of kicking them off the team. I admire him for that. I just think that there are some players that come here on occasion and they don't really buy into that disciplinary process. I mean, who knows if they played in another program, you know, that wasn't as strict with rules and regulations like this, you know, it may give them an idea that, hey, I want to go play here because I can maybe, you know, get away with some things that I can't here at Texas Tech. So I think that, you know, and goes back to the millennial stage. I think, you know, everybody's thinking about, you know, it comes, you know, thinking about themselves a little bit too much and wanting to do what's best for them. I understand that. But it's just rough to see. I really, I mean, I definitely think it's a little bit of both. It's just tough to see all of these players. And you went through that list, Ryan. All those players are, you know, were contributors in a way. Most of them were. You look at guys like Webb, you look at Bethel, you look at Madison. Those were key guys that helped this team last year in ways, and the last couple of years, really. So it's tough to see that go, and I think it's really been one of the reasons that this team is 4-6. You know, talent's getting diminished a little bit. Players leaving, transferring, wanting to do other things just because they're not buying into the program that Kingsbury is running right now. I do like the fact that he's willing to discipline guys, but not necessarily everybody thinks like Cliff does.
Yeah, and you know, it's getting Coach Strong in Texas in trouble because when he first mm-hmm. came into Texas, he dismissed 20-some-odd players from the program because they weren't measuring up in some form or fashion, and that was right when he got there. And a lot of boosters were like, that's all well mm-hmm. and good for you to be high and mighty on character, but when it comes time to winning games, you're going to want those kids because these are high-level athletes. Mm-hmm. Kind of the way a lot of people think now when money's involved and boosters and, you know, it could be anywhere. It could even be the coaching staff of certain organizations and programs that are bending the rules. But, you know, you're absolutely right. You look at – forget the offensive side because the offense seems to be doing just fine. But yeah. Even with, you know – let's talk about injuries, not even just leaving the team, but, you know, Keenan Ward being out.
Yeah, that hurts.
Your starting middle linebacker, who's young, who's going to be a sophomore this year, and Dakota Allen, he mm-hmm. and Hinton were going to be a tag team duo in the middle. Allen's okay. gone for disciplinary actions. You have your two starting cornerbacks from last year gone, and mm-hmm. Bethel and Madison. So you're, like, losing the core of your defensive, you know, your back seven, or your, you know, your secondary is completely gone. On top of which, Dixon, who was a starter in 2014, yeah, his role Derek was Dixon. Diminished in 2015. Yeah, Derek Dixon was diminished in 2015, and that's one of the reasons why he transferred.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're losing a lot of secondary depth, and I think that's why, once again, we're seeing Douglas Coleman have to step up and play more, and
yeah.
why Justice Nelson isn't playing safety as much anymore, that they've moved him back down into a corner spot, and why they're not able to let DJ Polite Bray play as much safety, that they're moving him down into the corner spot to do more man coverages. When if you look at how this team was supposed to work this year, you're going to have Allen and Hinton in the middle, with a bolstered defensive line with Pipkins and Hill. You were going to have Jordan Brooks and Brandon Stringer come in and help play through the front seven. You were going to have Madison and Bethel on the outside. You're going to have Justice Nelson and Deshaun Johnson up top, and rotate in DJ Polite-Bray through the safety in the nickel spot, and you're going to have a pretty good defense right there. And now over half those guys are gone, and you're kind of playing catch-up schematically.
Yeah, it's just an amazing turnover. Yeah. I've never seen a defense look so different than when we played LSU in the bowl game last year.
Oh yeah.
When I look at it now, it just looks so different.
And we were a young defense last year.
Yeah, and fans that don't, you know, really, you know that maybe aren't as big of fans as we are, they don't recognize some of these guys. Like, they're like, who is Braden Stringer? Who is
linebacker who's a true freshman.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I am glad that these young guys are getting playing time, because, you know, Gibbs has a chance to work with these guys, you know, develop them and get them to be, you know, to get them to be better players. But I just look at the talent that Gibbs has to work with, and he just doesn't have a lot left over from last year, it looks like. I mean, over half those guys are gone that he was trying to be successful with last year and that he was hoping to develop more. Now they're just gone.
And this kind of goes to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago with this defense, of whether it's a schematical issue or a talent issue. And the more I see, the more I think it's a schematical issue. We have talent. Brandon Stringer is a good talent. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be, you know, that type of high motor Mike Smith type of linebacker for us. I think Jordan Brooks is going to be outstanding. And he got hurt in Oklahoma State.
We'll see if he plays. That doesn't help.
Yeah, we'll see if he plays this weekend. But another true freshman who's absolutely playing out of his mind, has become a real leader and mainstay in that core. You have Jonathan Pacone coming up. He hasn't got as much playing time, but I think that's more about putting on weight than his than anything. You have, you know, Houston Miller coming in. You have Caleb Hill coming in. You have all these guys. And I think that's one of the reasons why Ivory Jackson kind of saw the writing on the wall. It wasn't so much that he didn't think he could hang with these guys as much as he's not going to get the snaps. If you look at Fajoko's going to be a junior next year. You've got Houston Miller is going to get snaps. You've got Caleb Hill coming in. It's going to transfer. You still have Colin Hill, who's going to be there for one more year. You've got Broderick Washington, who's playing out of his mind as a redshirt freshman. You've got Joe Wallace, who's going to be a redshirt freshman. Nick McCann, who's coming in. You've got all these defensive linemen that are waiting in the wings right now, playing the long game, as they call it. And he probably just said, you know, I really like it here, but at the same time, I want to get snaps. And to a certain extent, that's what you want. You want players to hang around. You want players to love the program. But at the same time, you like the player that wants, who wants to go get snaps. So,
right.
And this is, and like we just said, it's not a one-on-one battle like Mayfield versus Webb or something like that, where he just has to see which one's going to start. This is like, all right, I'm up against seven other people for snaps, and they can only play three or four of us at a time. You know, the odds aren't in my favor right there. So, sure. I did see one person post that if Kingsbury gets to a bowl this year, it may be one of the most underrated coaching jobs in Texas Tech history, just because of what he's had to deal with, the attrition on the offensive line this year due to injuries and transfers, the attrition, like we just talked about, on the defensive side, and for him to recover and be in all these games, losing four games by a touchdown or less. You know, you lose one possession, and that's not even counting Arizona State. That's Kansas State, you know, you lose by six. Oklahoma, you lose by seven.
A touchdown, yeah.
Texas, you lose by 8, and then you lose by 1 to Oklahoma State. A couple of bounces, and you look back through all these games about how many things went wrong. If we get a couple of bounces our way, you know, just the breaks, the percentages go in our way just a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's just 2 more wins, say we split those 4 games.
Yeah.
We're 6-4 now instead of 4-6.
Yeah, got to have the bounces go your way sometimes, and so far that hasn't happened yet.
No. So, speaking of that, you know, we're looking at, we have to win out to go bowling.
Mm-hmm.
No sense crying about losing close games when we had a chance to win. I think everybody can see that in each one of those games, we had a chance to put them away. I think that's one of the reasons why everybody's so frustrated with this team. And I know you wanted to talk a lot about, you know, what we need to do to get bowl eligible and what it's going to take. So with further ado, what is it going to take?
I mean, just going to take some more bounces going our way, Ryan. I mean, I definitely feel that this Iowa State game is a very winnable game. This is a team that is, you know, on, you know, it's, you know, better than, it's probably better than the record indicates, but it's still a very winnable game. I think Baylor's not a world beater, at least not anymore, based on what I've seen from them the last few weeks.
They haven't been a world beater all year.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest.
I thought too much about the I forgot the fact they played a weak non-conference schedule.
Very weak but, non-conference yeah. schedule.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just – I mean, I don't really know if there's really one thing that is going to make this team go from 4-6 to 6-6. I just think that I just think it's going to take them doing – every player doing everything that he possibly can to play his best and to execute fully, whether it's – you know, from Mahomes being, you know, crisp with his throws, really going through his reads like he did last week a lot of times, receivers not dropping passes, you know, make sure that those penalties clean up, you know, don't be disciplined on the offensive line, especially protect the quarterback. It's just going to take a lot, Ryan. I mean, this defense is going to do all it can do. They are getting some more turnovers, which is good to see, but they have to keep getting a few turnovers because, just seems like the offense, you know, the offense can't be perfect. They can't score on every drive. So defensively, you need to get a few turnovers and get some extra possessions and, or force three and outs, whatever the case may be. I mean, you talk about win or go home. You talk about it in a game 7 in the World Series or in the NBA playoffs or something like that. Now it's serious for these players and for Kingsbury. It's like if we lose, we're staying home after November 25th. And I know that Cliff doesn't want to do that. He wants to get extra practice, you know, if they get a bowl game.
Because we're young.
They're going to get more practice time for all of these young players that, you know, they're trying to develop and they're trying to get better. And if you can get those extra snaps as a young guy in a program, you know, you're going to get better. And Cliff wants that for his guys.
Yeah, you think about all the offensive linemen that are young from Travis
Buffy.
Yeah,
they can totally use extra snaps.
Yeah, you look at Jonathan Giles is still a sophomore. Kiki mm-hmm. QT is a sophomore. Tony Brown's a sophomore. You have all these guys that are really, really young. And even like we said on the defense, Stringer needs more snaps. Brooks needs more snaps.
Yeah.
Douglas Coleman's a freshman. You've got it up and down where that extra amount of time to be within the system and learn terminology and maybe get more than just the basic vanilla stuff. Like I was talking about, it's just, they lack experience. They don't necessarily lack talent. They lack experience to, you know, that you can exactly. only get through games and reps and understanding this, the schemes that Gibbs wants to do. And Gibbs is too smart to be playing this vanilla defense just because that's all he's got in his playbook. He probably mm-hmm. is doing that because of the lack of experience on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just where he's handicapped at. We can't do something overly complicated or aggressive because the players may not react well to it in the game type situation until they get more experience. So yeah, it's huge to get bowl eligible, and I know Kingsbury knows that. It's just kind of horrible that you're running up against Iowa State in Ames when they seem to be getting stronger.
Yeah.
I would have it's one of those teams where you look at them, they're like, oh, they're 2-8. But this is a strong 2-8. This is a very easily could be 5-5 right now. And a very dangerous because you don't know a whole lot about them. They aren't flashy. They aren't a team that's going to break if you go up by 20 points. They're remind me a lot of Kansas State, where they just hang around and hang around, and then you end up making a mistake. And you know, you look at Baylor beat them by a field goal. Oklahoma State had to erase a double-digit deficit to come back and beat Iowa State, and that was in Stillwater. You know, they're just their second win was against Kansas, but this is a team that continues and continues and continues to get better under Matt Campbell, their new coach, and he's completely changed the identity of that program. He's really gone in there. They've got new uniforms. I think they look great. That charcoal gray, we talked about it for 20 minutes on the pre-pod about how good these uniforms look, and especially their away uniforms with the white helmets and the white jersey and the charcoal pants. They look fantastic. It's really changed the identity of that program. And I think they're going to be dangerous for years to come if he can continue to have people buy into it. Speaking of, they've got some playmakers on Iowa State.
They do,
and not just playmakers at the college level, but when you look at just the size and length and skill set of their prime time wide receiver, that's a guy you could see playing in the NFL, and playing for a long time in the NFL. So go ahead and give me your rundown of key players to watch this Saturday for Iowa State.
Well, I'm going to start off with the guy you just described. His name is Allen Lazard, and
you are
right, Ryan. He has the kind of Josh Doctson, lanky kind of – he has the look of a pro wide receiver, no doubt in my mind. Excuse me. Yeah, his stats
– he's only 6'5", 223.
Yeah, still –
let's talk about prototypical NFL wide receiver here.
I don't know. He looks like that when I watch him play most of the time. Looks like he's got good ball skills, good ability. Yeah, so far for the season, Lazard has 58 receptions. He has 778 yards. He only has 6 touchdowns, but I think that's due in part to Iowa State's 2-quarterback system they got going on.
It's still tied for a career high for him for the season.
Yeah. But it goes beyond just Lazard. Another key player that I'm looking out for is Iowa State's running back Mike Warren.
Good pick.
He looks pretty good. He only has 547 yards. He only has 3 touchdowns, but he's carried the ball 127 times. That's a lot of carries for based on, as opposed to Texas Tech's running backs and how much we run the football. So, yeah, Warren definitely has he definitely looks like a good running back. He's a young guy, so he's definitely a guy to watch for. Quarterback-wise, Joel Lanning is the most experienced guy on the team. Lanning also has good mobile ability. He's a mobile quarterback. As far as throwing, he's only thrown 9 touchdowns. But for the season in rushing, I can find his numbers really quick for rushing because he is a mobile quarterback. He can do some other things. I've seen him run a little bit of option. Yeah, Lanning. Lanning has he has 347 yards, but he's carried the ball 104 times as the quarterback. His longest was a 41 yard touchdown run. So that was pretty impressive. He's run for 6 touchdowns on the year. So when I look at Iowa State, yeah, they may be 2-8, but they got some playmakers on offense that this defense is going to need to look out for.
What's scary is they rotate 2 or 3 quarterbacks through depending on what they want to do. Like you said, Lanning doesn't have that many passing yards. He's typically a runner. So when they pull out Oh, who are you telling me it was? Number 10.
Well, number 10 is Jacob Park.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, this is actually pretty interesting. Both of these quarterbacks almost have the completions and attempts for both of these quarterbacks are just about identical. Lanning has gone for the season 96 out of 165, and Jacob Park has gone 96 out of 164 on the season. Park actually has thrown more touchdowns than Lanning. It's only one more, but he's thrown 10 as opposed to Lanning, who's only thrown for 9. Park definitely is the more pocket passer guy. Park's not a guy that's going to run the football a lot. Lanning is that quarterback they're going to put in those running situations when maybe they want to run a little option with Lanning and Warren, whatever way they want to try to attack the defense. But Jacob Park is the quarterback they bring in when they need to get some passes down the field and they need to complete maybe a big pass to Lazard. Park has 1,135 yards on the season. He's only thrown 4 interceptions. So when he's in the game, it looks like he's done a good job of taking care of the football.
Right. So here's my question. They're rotating these quarterbacks in, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is obviously more of a running quarterback, an option, read option, or just a straight, power quarterback, running quarterback. And you have another one who's more of a pocket passer, and yet they're still finding success offensively. How do you not see Lanning come in and still give up the amount of yards that teams are giving to him when you know 8 out of 10 times it's going to be a running play?
Yeah.
Whether to him or handing off to Mike Warren.
Yeah.
Whereas when, you know, they rotate the quarterback in and they go to more of a passing style, and you're like, okay, why aren't we putting into a pass defense at this point? Because you know you're going to get more of a pass play call from that one. It's just kind of really strange to me how they must be much better than we think if they're still finding success. They're still in these games late when they're telegraphing their play calls that much.
Yeah, it's very interesting, but it seems like that it's worked a lot of times.
It has, yeah.
It has. I do think it's a little bit of, I think just a little bit of, just playing a little bit of a chess match, because Lanning can run and he can throw. When Park's in there, it's mainly going to be a pass, and you're going to be trying to cover Lazard. Look out for him. Iowa State definitely is a running football team based on the stats that I'm looking at and the kind of big plays that they've made this season with Warren and Lanning running the football. So yeah, this isn't just a rollover opponent, Ryan. This is a team that is probably the best 2-8 football team in the country right now.
Yes, by far. I think, and again, you always admire these types of programs. Matt Campbell coming in and doing the things that he's done, especially when Paul Rhodes was so beloved by that program and the players, and they were so heartbroken when he was let go. And they haven't missed a beat. They've come right in. They're fighting for Campbell, Coach Campbell. And I think they've got big things ahead of them, especially when you consider Lazard is only a junior, and if he sticks around for his senior year, they're going to be doing some really, really big things next year, in my opinion. So go ahead and give me your key to the game, Maitland.
Well,
try not to be repetitive.
Yeah, I'm trying really not to be. I think a key to the game is probably got to stack the box a little more on defense, because this is a running football team. Might have to bring in some extra guys on defense. Gibbs might have to put some more guys in there to get contained on Lanning and Mike Warren as far as the run game is concerned, because that definitely seems like the biggest threat to, even though Lazard is out there and he can get you yardage, the running game seems like the biggest threat to Texas Tech, based on the fact that running backs have always had a field day against the Red Raiders just about every game this season. So stack the box, get guys in there and see if you can slow down the run, maybe force them to go to the pass a little bit more, just maybe get them out of what they normally want to try to do.
That's a great point. I think you're absolutely right. If you're Gibbs, you have to go up to Coleman, which I believe you have a lot of confidence in, and you got to go up to Nelson, and you got to sit there and say, you're playing man, you're playing physical, you're playing press all night, because we're going man on the outside, and we're going to stack the box, and we're going to really try to shut down the run, and that means you're going to be left on an island, and let's see how good you are at being a cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great point. If I had to say a key to the game, I would have to say it's obscure. I've been thinking about this just a little bit, but I think as far as a key to the game, get Stockton in space. Go back to what we were doing last year, and I know a lot of what happened last year and the success we had with Stockton in space was due to the fact of kind of the contrast to DeAndre. DeAndre was such a good runner in between the tackles that you could get Stockton out in space, and that now with DeAndre not there, with Stockton, you know, other teams kind of key on that. But at the same time, you've got one of the fastest guys on the field in Stockton, and if we're unable to get him in space, whether it's a roll to the right, throw back to the left screen like we did against TCU, or do something other than just have him run it in between the tackles for 3 or 4 yards at a time. Get him in space. Allow him to do like he did against Arizona State. If you remember, he was in space.
Yeah.
Against Arizona State.
He had a long touchdown on a screen pass.
And he was breaking tackles and bouncing off of people and running away from people. That's the type of Justin Stockton we need. He's only a junior. He's still got a lot of potential left. I don't know why people have just completely said, all right, he can't cut it as a running back. He's actually a very good running back for a Texas Tech system. We're not an SEC pro style or, you know, trying to line up under center and run between the tackles. He's a guy, Torian Henderson. If people don't remember, Torian Henderson led Texas Tech in receptions until Jakeem Grant broke it, I believe. And he was a running back. Torian Henderson was one of the best receiving running backs Tech has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get back to that. Get Stockton in space. Somewhere where, you know, when he catches the ball, there isn't someone right on his, you know, his hip to tackle him or, you know, something like that. Get him to where he can make a move, where he can start moving north-south, where he can get that burst and acceleration. Because we've seen what happens. If he gets a step, he's gone.
Yeah.
So you've got to utilize that speed, especially against a very well-disciplined Iowa State team, but altogether probably not as athletic as Texas Tech. It's one of the overall things we've said all year. If you compare teams, Texas Tech overall is one of the faster teams. Use speed to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, run away from these guys. So I think that's my key, is to get Stockton in space.
Yeah, I love the fact you brought that up. I feel like that Stockton's best place, he's best used in the passing game when you get him in space and you get him going. That's when he excels. Running in between the tackles, not going to cut it with Stockton.
And that's not a knock against Stockton. That's just not his skill set.
Yeah.
And because that's not his skill set doesn't mean that he's a horrible running back. That wasn't Torian Henderson's skill set. And he's one of the most well thought of running backs in Texas Tech history, especially in the air raid era. We're, you know, so I completely agree. Now that I got that off my chest. So now let's move on to predictions. And go ahead and give me your prediction for the game, Maitland.
All right. Well, I see shades of the 2014 game when Texas Tech went up to Ames and it was close the whole game. Texas Tech got on top of them early but lost the lead. But I'm going to say the Texas Tech wins and keeps their bowl eligibility hopes alive. They beat the Cyclones 35-31.
Wow.
Not bad.
I'm gonna go with my preseason prediction on this one, so don't hate me too much. And by the way, I'm looking at your preseason prediction right now. Uh-huh. You just said 35-31. Your preseason prediction was 38-17. Oh. So I'm going to go 50-28. I think we hang 50 on them. I think this team comes out really disciplined. I guess I need to critique that a little bit because it's supposed to be like 40 degrees at kickoff.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be cold.
It's supposed to be cold. It's supposed to be, you need about 16 pairs, you know, 16 layers in your electric socks and everything else.
All the tech players are going to have the long sleeves on and those things covering their head.
Keep
their heads warm under the helmets, breath coming out of their face masks.
Let me look this up real quick about what it actually is going to be like on Saturday.
This is Texas Tech's northmost game, so it's going to get colder up. It gets colder up.
I mean, we used to be used to this in the old days when we'd have to go play Missouri or Colorado. We were pretty used to having cold weather games at certain points of the season. But it's definitely a different environment up there close to Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday, the high is supposed to be 43 degrees.
Ooh,
that's the high.
Yeah, well, that's why I said
the
that.
The low is 17, and the wind chill is supposed to be the high with the wind chill is supposed to be around 31. And the low at 10 degrees.
Yeah. Cliff Kingsbury is going to have to put an overcoat on for probably the first time in his coaching career. Really I just thought about that.
It'd be hilarious if he comes out there in his normal coaching shirt and he's just like, no, I got this.
Yeah. He's probably going to have a parka on or something.
Yeah.
Big winter jacket.
That's hilarious.
It's going to look kind of different. It's like, that's not Cliff. Where's his Ray-Bans in his long sleeve Under Armour shirt?
Well, he probably will still have his Ray-Bans on, or I guess it's Under Armour glasses now. But it's going to be cold. It'll be interesting to see how Tech's defense reacts to Mike Warren running downhill on him in that type of weather.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting. It'd be just interesting for this team playing in cold weather because. Mm-hmm. They're not used to it. You know, you look at the away games they've had this season. None of them have been this cold, and especially with all these young players on defense, it's going to be interesting to see how they react to playing in cold weather and playing against a pretty good running offense.
Mm-hmm. Looks like wind gusts up to 20 miles per hour on Saturday at game time as well.
Ooh, wow,
that's where that wind chill comes in.
Good luck, Clayton Hatfield.
Yeah. Poor guy, but yeah, it's gonna be quite the experience. And again, I think if we're able to pull out a win, sign Kingsbury to another extension.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a homer. Get over it, people. Last thing on the docket for tonight is what's going on around the Big 12. And got some interesting games going on this weekend. Now, last week, Texas lost to West Virginia. May or may not be the end of the Charlie Strong era based on kind of what we heard the ultimatum was about having to win out. There was also a story up earlier today saying that Tom Herman at Houston is being pursued by both Texas and LSU. So he may be done, but they do get Kansas in Lawrence this weekend. So that should solidify Texas at getting a bowl. They would improve to 6-5.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas is 24 point underdogs.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it just be awesome if you're Kansas and you're able to beat Texas?
It would be awesome. That game's also on national TV, on ABC, to pull a win off like this, especially for David Beattie, who's in his second year, really struggling, obviously. Be great for him, for the program, and to do this on national TV. get some of those Jayhawk fans to come in maybe for the rest of the season. Yeah.
That would be a huge win for that program. And, you know, if heaven forbid, you know, Charlie Strong is on his way out the door anyway, what's it going to hurt that they lose this next game to Kansas?
Right.
You have Kansas State goes down to Waco to play Baylor. Baylor is not looking good right now. I think K-State absolutely has their way with Baylor. Baylor's only favorite, or is actually a 2-point underdog to Kansas State.
Mm-hmm.
That's on ESPN2 at 11 o'clock. And that puts Baylor at 6-4 going into our game at the Jones. Or not the Jones, Jerry World. The other Jones. But I think Kansas State just absolutely rolls over Baylor, actually.
Yeah, I think Kansas State has a good chance, especially the Bill Snyder.
Especially with Seth Russell out.
Yeah, oh yeah, big time. Seth Russell being out, that changes Baylor in a completely new way. Stidham obviously isn't there anymore, so they got to rely on, I know his last name is Smith as far as their backup quarterback.
I'm not playing there. Nope. Yeah. You can't pay me enough to play at Baylor. I joke because my last name is Smith. The other two big games, Oklahoma State plays TCU. Oklahoma State is favored by 4.5. I take that back. TCU is favored by 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see Oklahoma State stumbling in Fort Worth, allowing TCU to become bowl eligible at 6-4?
You know, for this game, I don't see Oklahoma State stumbling. I know TCU had a big win against Baylor. And, you know, it was a big bounce back game for them after losing to us in double overtime. But Oklahoma State, you know, they did win by just one against us last week. But I don't know. I do think Oklahoma State pulls that one out, not by a whole lot. But I think they win against TCU in Fort Worth. I don't see them stumbling.
Yeah, at this point, I'm just like, burn it down. Go TCU. But that leads us into the primetime game, the game that everybody's going to be watching, the game that will most likely decide, if Oklahoma State pulls it out, obviously this game doesn't mean as much, but it basically will just settle the Big 12 championship as Oklahoma goes to Morgantown to play West Virginia. Two top 15 teams, lock and horns. Oklahoma is favored by 3.5. Oklahoma's defeated West Virginia in 4 straight encounters. West Virginia just came off a close win at Texas. Oklahoma basically had their way with Baylor. How do you see this game going?
Well, you talk about a game that's meant for primetime. This is definitely a good place to put that game. 9 versus 14, definitely really a Big 12 championship kind of game. I honestly see West Virginia pulling it out and ending their losing streak to Oklahoma. Morgantown's a tough place to play. The fans down there are crazy, especially with the way the team's playing at 8-1 right now. West Virginia, you said, came off a big win against Texas. They've been playing pretty well against everybody for most of the season. So I think I'm going to take Holgorsen and the Mountaineers at home to beat the Sooners.
I'm right there with you. I think they get it done. It's on ABC. It's at 7 o'clock. It's the primetime game. I'm not sure if Herb Street and the primetime crew are going to be calling it or not, but it seems like that's their slot. So
they probably will because it's on ABC.
Yeah, it should be a really good game. But yeah, go Dana and go the Mountaineers to beat those land thieves. But that's all I got. Any closing thoughts there, Maitland?
Win or go home. That's all I got.
That's a good one. We will be back Saturday night, hopefully, to talk about what happened. Hopefully talking about a Texas Tech win. That'll post on Sunday. And then we will have the alumni pod and combine it with the Baylor preview early next week, probably on Tuesday, to get you ready for the Friday night matchup with Baylor and Jerry World. So for Maitland, I am Ryan. Thank you for joining us. This has been the Air Raid Podcast brought to you by VivaTheMatadors.com.